The following is a presentation of Morning Drive Media and the Wrestling Viewpoint Network.
Hi, I'm Dan Farron for the Wrestling Viewpoint Network and the California Classic Wrestling page on Facebook. Since we're between podcasts right now in the middle of the holiday season, I thought it might be kind of fun to do a little verbal history today and talk a little bit and take a look at where the promotion in Southern California was in December of 1974, 39 years ago, to kind of get an overview of what was going on and where it was headed. The man in charge, the man with all the gold in December of 1974, was a familiar face in Southern California, the Maniac, John Tolles. Tolles held the America's title after spending most of 1974 as a manager. He had lost a stipulation match to Victor Rivera earlier in the year and wound up becoming the manager of the mysterious masked Mr. California, who in actuality most of the time was Salvador Lothario, another longtime California favorite and familiar face. Louis Tellet took over the booking sometime toward the fall of 1974. And one of the first things he did was reinstate Tolles back into wrestling again. Tellet was kind of a controversial booker. Some people liked him. Some people didn't like his booking. He had studied under Leo Garibaldi, so obviously he knew the fundamentals, and he was working as a booker elsewhere, and he was fairly good at it. I think the most controversial thing about Tellet was that he did one of those things that a lot of wrestlers do that a lot of people don't like, and that is as soon as they become the booker, they push themselves to the top. And it didn't happen overnight. There was a gradual rise there. But Tellet, who was kind of an interesting choice in Southern California, he was a French-Canadian, a little tiny guy. He was a brawler. He didn't have a great physique. But he did get over quite well. I do remember the crowds really kind of popping for him. But it was kind of controversial, you know, once again, for the booker to be eventually the lead babyface in the company. But at this time, one of the first things he did, and it was a wise idea, was reinstate John Tolles. And Tolles spent a lot of the fall brawling and battling the America's champion, Pampero Firpo. They traded the belts back and forth a couple times. And then finally, on the night before Thanksgiving in 1974, Tolles defeated Firpo with the help of Greg Valentine on television to win the America's title. Greg Valentine had been wrestling for about 4 years at that point. He had wrestled under a lot of different names, but this was the very first time that he had wrestled under the name Greg Valentine. It was not unusual back in those days to take a young rookie and put them with a veteran, and that way maybe they could get a little bit of a rub off him. And that's exactly what they did with Valentine. They put Valentine with Tolles. Valentine interfered in Tolles' matches. Tolles interfered in Valentine matches. They would team up on a regular basis. And it really was a really wise and good move for Greg Valentine. Valentine was also, for the very first time, as I said before, called Greg Valentine the brother of Johnny Valentine. He wasn't referred to as the son of Johnny Valentine yet because Valentine was still working mostly down in Texas. And at that time, a lot of people felt that if you had a big babyface star working someplace and the fans found out that he had a son who was wrestling, unless it was some sort of angle in many cases, they felt it diminished the drawing power and the star of the older wrestler. But Valentine really kind of cut his teeth here in Los Angeles. He beat Firpo in a cage match on December 20th, lost a Texas death match to Louis Tellet in San Bernardino on the 29th, but really started to make a move, and he found in 1975 that the promotion was ready to reward that move and put the America's belt on him. But that's a story for another time. Also, one of the things that was interesting about the Firpo-Tolles feud was that they went outside of Los Angeles and brought back a couple guys who had worked in L.A. before, the fire-throwing Sheik and Mighty Igor in to work tag matches and singles matches. Igor had worked in Los Angeles under his real name Dick Garza many years before, and the Sheik was well known as the fire-throwing Sheik. And in fact, earlier in the fall, he had thrown fire in the face of wrestler referee Lou Anthony. So it was quite a coup to have them there at that time. Tolis retained the title against Dino Bravo on the 6th of December. But, you know, one of the nice things about the wrestlers of Tolis's generation, and something that Tolis was really good at, is that even if he lost a match, even if it was a non-title match, he still had a way of getting his heat back. And he dropped a couple different matches in December of 1974. He lost to Dennis Stamp in a lumberjack match on December 1st in San Bernardino with Baron Michele Leone, the great Baron Michele Leone as the referee. He lost a non-title cage match to Edouard Carpentier on December 20th and put his belt up in San Bernardino against Victor Rivera on the 22nd. And lost that match via DQ. Finally, on Christmas night in 1974 in San Diego, Edouard Carpentier, a former WWA World Heavyweight Champion, defeated Tolis to win the America's title, and they spent the last few weeks of the year battling back and forth in different places like Bakersfield, Ventura, and San Bernardino, and Carpentier hung on to the belt or retained it. Dino Bravo and Victor Rivera held the America's tag belts going into the month, and they feuded with the great Hollywood Blondes, Jerry Brown and Buddy Roberts, managed by Sir Oliver Humperdinck. They had some great matches during December. And they did a very interesting angle, and this is where they first brought Louis Tellez out as an active wrestler again. When Bravo got the shot at John Tolis, they allowed Victor Rivera to pick a mystery partner to defend the tag belts against the Hollywood Blondes, who had won a non-title match just a couple weeks earlier. Rivera supposedly chose Tellez, who came out of retirement for that match, but Tellez and Rivera lost the match to the Blondes, and the Blondes became the tag team champions. But that was the catalyst for Tellez to resign from the NWA. He was an NWA representative, supposedly, according to the angle, and allowed him to go into wrestling full-time. Rivera and Bravo chased the Blondes for the rest of the month, trying to win the belts back, but to no avail. They did a very funny and interesting TV angle right around toward the middle of the month, where the Blondes wrestled on TV against the Masked Avengers. And the Avengers looked an awful lot like Victor Rivera and Dino Bravo wearing white masks. And it was very funny how Judo Jean LaBelle, who was doing the play-by-play, just to make sure that the audience knew that there was Bravo and Rivera, would say things like, "Oh, folks, I don't know. I think one of those masked men is speaking Spanish, and I think I heard the other one speaking Italian. I wonder who they could be." The Be the Champ television title continued to be held by Dennis Stamp all throughout December. You know, I always feel kind of bad for Dennis Stamp because most everyone who knows him now knows him from Beyond the Mat, and that always leads to the "Am I booked?" jokes that that he always has to hear. I don't think he would have been a big star, but I did like Dennis Stamp's work. He was perfect for the middle of the card. He was an AWA Rookie of the Year. He had held a lot of titles elsewhere. He was solid. And he held the Beat the Champ belt for almost 7 months, which was a really unheard of thing at that time. But it seems that everyone always remembers him from Beyond the Mat, and I think it's kind of sad for Dennis, because I think he deserves to be remembered for a lot more than just that. Porkchop Cash returned to Southern California in December of 1974. He may have set a record for the quickest return after a loser leave town match. He dropped one in a steel cage in San Bernardino to Tolis at the end of October, yet by the beginning of December he was back again. And they had him feuding with the NWA Junior Heavyweight Champion Ken Mantell, who came through for most of the month of December. Also debuting in December was the Mighty Zulu, a rather controversial figure, if you remember the stories about him during that time period. He truthfully kind of floundered when he first came in. He worked a lot of matches on TV, and he worked in tag team matches, but quite often was in the losing end of that. Though at the end of the month, on the 28th, he won a mini battle royal at the KCOP TV studios, which prepared him for a big angle that would be done with him and Andre the Giant during the January 1975 battle royal. Also new to Southern California in December of 1974 was Lord Patrick Roach, a very skilled English grappler, rather big guy. He came in and kind of floundered also in the very beginning, winding up in tag team matches and things like that. In December, they gave him an angle where if he could, that he would put up $1,000 to anyone who could beat him. And it was the old trick where that $1,000 was only up for the first 15 minutes of the match. And if you beat him after 15 minutes, you would not get the $1,000, which was kind of an interesting angle. It always seemed to get over quite well. I know I saw a couple different matches where Porkchop beat Lord Patrick Roach, but only after 15 minutes, so he did not get the $1,000. And it was an interesting angle because on one hand, everybody was excited that Roach was beaten by Porkchop, but yet they were disappointed that Porkchop didn't win the $1,000, and I'm sure Porkchop was disappointed too, and I'm sure that that he was quite aware of the fact that there was no $1,000 up, not in the LaBelle promotion. Roach went on to become an actor, and he appeared in the first couple of the Indiana Jones films. In fact, he's probably most remembered as the large mechanic during the whole battle on the runway where he fights Indiana Jones in the first one and winds up walking into the propeller of the airplane. And that is a short overview of the month of December 1974. I hope you enjoyed it. This is just something very, very informal. And if you did, maybe we'll do some more. In the meantime, I keep watching the Wrestling Viewpoint Network. We will be back with another edition of the California Classic podcast very soon. And if you want to, if you could go over and like it on Facebook and join us there, or like the podcast, or join us on the wrestling Southern California Wrestling Classic. I think you'll find it quite interesting, a nice little slice of history. I thank you very much. This is Dan Farron, and I will see you next time.
Thanks, Dan. That was a great, informative look at the California wrestling scene in December of 1974. And Dangerous Dan Farron is going to have more of those mini-casts on the way that take a look at a certain aspect of the history of California wrestling and put it out there for you guys to enjoy. And don't worry, we have full episodes of the California Classic Wrestling Podcast in the works. We just had a busy holiday season for everyone, and we're trying to line up some great guests and topics for you. That's going to happen. Some other shows coming out here, the Wrestling Viewpoint Network. We're going to continue our look at the Attitude Era with Joe Ruggiero. Parts 3 and 4 are coming out soon. And also, we've got some other great little shows for you. We're going to take a look at the Smoky Mountain Wrestling Group, Jim Cornette, Smoky Mountain Wrestling Federation. We're going to take a look at that with Dan Farron. And also, we're going to do a spotlight on the expansion of that little tiny Northeast Wrestling Territory, as it's called on their own broadcast, and how Vince McMahon took that little territory, that poor, helpless little territory, and blew it up into the juggernaut that it is today, the World Wrestling Entertainment Group. We're going to have that as well. It's got a lot of stuff planned in 2014 for the Wrestling Viewpoint Network, so be sure to follow us on Twitter so you don't miss a thing. That is WrestlingVN on Twitter. And then also find us on Facebook, and don't forget to look for the California Classic Wrestling Podcast future episodes and the group on Facebook run by Dan Farron. So until next time, I'm Ken Apsok for Dan Farron. We'll see you on the Wrestling Viewpoint Network.